tail.
Brought to you by BunnySlippers.com. Check out their brand new Dino Sound Slippers. Slippers make a roaring sound every 3 steps. Made with green scaly fabric, soft plush uppers, foam footbeds, non-slip grips on soles, and 3 white claws on each foot. One size fits most up to women's 10.5, men's 9. Footbed measures 10.5. Black Clock Audio Tales is a daily podcast that reads you a story, either a chapter of a novel or a whole short story. Join us in our exploration of old ghost stories, supernatural fiction, horror tales, folk tales, fantasy, gothic horror, weird fiction, and cosmic horror. And don't forget to join us for our monthly show about the Cthulhu mythos. Look for our podcast near the old wishing well in the blasted heath, wherever you find your podcasts. We suggest Podbean or Apple Podcasts. Find us on the web at pgttcm.com and at Black Clock Audio on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and Black Clock Audio Tales on YouTube. Welcome to Black Clock Audio Tales. Check out our new website over at www.pgttcm.com. Edited by Daniel Spitzer. Music by Kevin MacLeod. Welcome, lore of Great Britain.
Join us at the end of the month when we talk about the Great Old Ones.
Folklore and Legends, English, by Charles John Tibbetts. The Old Woman and the Crooked Sixpence. An old woman was sweeping her house, and she found a crooked sixpence. "What," says she, "shall I do with this sixpence? I will go to the market and buy a pig with it." She went, and as she was coming home, she came to a stile. Now the pig would not go over the stile. The woman went on a little further and met a dog. "Dog," said she, "bite pig. Piggy won't go over the stile, and I shan't get home tonight." But the dog would not bite the pig. The woman went on a little further, and she met a stick. "Stick," said she, "beat dog. Dog won't bite pig. Piggy won't go over stile, and I shan't get home tonight." But the stick would not. The woman went on a little further, and she met a fire. "Fire," said she, "burn stick. Stick won't beat dog. Dog won't bite pig. Piggy won't go over the stile, and I shan't get home tonight." But the fire would not. The woman went on a little further, and she met some water. "Water," said she, "quench fire. Fire won't burn stick. Stick won't beat dog, etc." But the water would not. The woman went on a little further, and she met an ox. "Ox," said she, "drink water. Water won't quench fire, etc." But the ox would not. The woman went on again, and she met a butcher. "Butcher," said she, "kill ox. Ox won't drink water, etc." But the butcher would not. The woman went on a little further and met a rope. "Rope," said she, "hang butcher. Butcher won't kill ox, etc." But the rope would not. Again the woman went on and she met a rat. "Rat," said she, "gnaw rope. Rope won't hang butcher, etc." But the rat would not. The woman went on a little further and met a cat. "Cat," said she, "kill rat. Rat won't gnaw rope, etc." "Oh," said the cat, "I will kill the rat if you will fetch me a basin of milk from the cow over there." The old woman went to the cow and asked her to let her have some milk for the cat. "No," said the cow, "I will let you have no milk unless you bring me a mouthful of hay from yonder stack." Away went the old woman to the stack and fetched the hay and gave it to the cow. Then the cow gave her some milk and the old woman took it to the cat. When the cat had lapped the milk, the cat began to kill the rat. The rat began to gnaw the rope. The rope began to hang the butcher. The butcher began to kill the ox. The ox began to drink the water. The water began to quench the fire. The fire began to burn the stick. The stick began to beat the dog. The dog began to bite the pig, and Piggy, in a fright, jumped over the stile. And so, after all, the old woman got safe home that night.
The Yorkshire boggart. A boggart intruded himself, upon what pretext or by what authority is unknown, into the house of a quiet, inoffensive, and laborious farmer. And when once it had taken possession, it disputed the right of domicile with the legal mortal tenant in a very unneighborly and arbitrary manner. In particular, it seemed to have a great aversion to children, as there is no point on which a parent feels more acutely than that of the maltreatment of his offspring. The feelings of the father, and more particularly of his good dame, were daily, aye, and nightly harrowed up by the malice of this malignant and invisible boggart. A boggart is seldom visible to the human eye, though it is frequently seen by cattle, particularly by horses, and then they are said to take the boggle, a Yorkshireism for a shying horse. The children's bread and butter would be snatched away, or their porringers of bread and milk would be dashed down by an invisible hand. Or, if they were left alone for a few minutes, they were sure to be found screaming with terror on the return of the parents, like the farmer's children in the tale of the Field of Terror, whom the drudging goblin used to torment and frighten when he was left alone with them. The stairs led up from the kitchen. A partition of boards covered the ends of the steps and formed a closet beneath the staircase. A large round knot was accidentally displaced from one of the boards of this partition. One day the farmer's youngest boy was playing with the shoehorn, and as children will do, he stuck the horn into this knot hole. Whether the aperture had been found by the boggart as a peephole to watch the motions of the family, or whether he wished to amuse himself, is uncertain. But sure it is, the horn was thrown back with surprising precision at the head of the child. It was found that as often as the horn was replaced in the hole, so surely it was ejected with a straight aim at the offender's head. Time at length made familiar this wonderful occurrence, and that which at the first was regarded with terror became at length a kind of amusement within the more thoughtless and daring of the family. Often was the horn slipped slyly into the hole, and the boggart never failed to dart it out at the head of one or the other, but most commonly he or she who placed it there was the mark at which the invisible foe launched the offending horn. They used to call this, in their provincial dialect, lachen with boggart, i.e., playing with the boggart. As if enraged at these liberties taken with his boggartship, the goblin commenced a series of night disturbances. Heavy steps, as of a person in wooden clogs, were often heard clattering down the stairs in the dead hour of darkness, and the pewter and earthen dishes appeared to be dashed on the kitchen floor, though in the morning all were found uninjured on their respective shelves. The children were chiefly marked out as objects of dislike by their unearthly tormentor. The curtains of their beds would be violently pulled backward and forward. Anon, a heavy weight, as of a human being, would press them nearly to suffocation. They would then scream out for the daddy and mommy, who occupied the adjoining room, and thus the whole family was disturbed night after night. Things could not long go on after this fashion. The farmer and his good dame resolved to leave the place where they had not the least shadow of rest or comfort. The farmer, whose name was George Gilbertson, was following with his wife and family the last load of furniture when they met a neighboring farmer, whose name was John Marshall, between whom and the unhappy tenant the following colloquy took place. "Well, George, and so you're leaving to old hoose at last?" "Hi, Johnny, my lad, I'm forced till it, for that boggart torments us so we can neither rest neat nor day for it. It seems like to have such a malice against poor bairns. It almost kills my poor dam here at thoughts on it, and so, you see, we're forced to flit like." He had got thus far in his complaint, when, behold, a shrill voice from a deep upright churn called out,
Aye, aye, George, we're flitting, you see.
Confound thee, says the poor farmer. If I'd known thou'd been there, I hadn't a stirred a peg. Nay, nay, it's no use, Mally, turning to his wife. We might as well turn back again to old hosts, as he tormented in another that's not so convenient. They are said to have turned back, but the boggart and they afterwards came to a better understanding, though it long continued its trick of shooting the horn from the knothole.
The Duergar. The following encounters with the Duergar, a species of mischievous elves, are said to have taken place on Simonside Hills, a mountainous district between Rothbury and Elsdon in Northumberland. A person well acquainted with the locality went out one night to amuse himself with the pranks of these mysterious beings. When he had wandered a considerable time, he shouted loudly, "Tint! Tint!" and a light appeared before him like a burning candle in the window of a shepherd's cottage. Thither, with great caution, he bent his steps and speedily approached a deep slough, from whence a quantity of moss or peat had been excavated, and which was now filled with mud and water. Into this he threw a piece of turf which he raised at his feet, and when the sound of the splash echoed throughout the surrounding stillness, the decoying light was extinguished. The adventurer retraced his steps, overjoyed at his dexterity in outwitting the fiendish imps, and in a moment of exultation, as if he held all the powers of darkness in defiance, he again cried to the full extent of his voice, "Tint! Tint!" His egotism subsided, however, more quickly than it arose, when he observed three of the little demons, with hideous visages, approach him, carrying torches in their diminutive hands, as if they wished to inspect the figure of their enemy. He now betook himself to the speed of his heels for safety, but found that an innumerable multitude of the same species were gathering round him, each with a torch in one hand and a short club in the other, which they brandished with such gestures as if they were resolved to oppose his flight and drive him back into the morass. Like a knight of romance, he charged with his oaken staff the foremost of his foes, striking them, as it seemed, to the earth, for they disappeared. But his offensive weapon encountered in its descent no substance of flesh or bone, and, beyond its sweep, the demons appeared to augment both in size and number. On witnessing so much of the unearthly, his heart failed him. He sank down in a state of stupor, nor was he himself again, till the grey light of the morning dispersed his unhallowed opponents, and revealed before him the direct way to his own dwelling. Another time, a traveller, wandering over these mountain solitudes, had the misfortune to be benighted, and perceiving near him a glimmering light, he hastened thither and found what appeared to be a hut, on the floor of which, between two rough grey stones, the embers of a fire, which had been supplied with wood, were still glowing and unconsumed. He entered, and the impression on his mind was that the place had been deserted an hour or two previously by gypsies, for on one side lay a couple of old gateposts ready to be split up for fuel, and a quantity of refuse brushwood, such as is left from besom making, was strewn upon the floor. With this material he trimmed the fire and had just seated himself on one of the stones, when a diminutive figure in human shape, not higher than his knee, came waddling in at the door and took possession of the other. The traveller, being acquainted with the manner in which things of this description ought to be regarded, retained his self-possession, kept his seat, and remained silent, knowing that if he rose up or spoke, his danger would be redoubled. And as the flame blazed up, he examined minutely the hollow eyes, the stern, vindictive features, and the short, strong limbs of the visitor before him. By degrees he perceived that the hut afforded little or no shelter from the cold night air, and as the energy of the fire subsided, he lifted from the floor a piece of wood, broke it over his knee, and laid the fragments upon the red-hot embers. Whether this operation was regarded by his strange neighbor as a species of insult, we cannot say, but the demon seized, as if in bitter mockery, one of the gateposts, broke it likewise over its knee, and laid the pieces on the embers in the same manner. The other, having no wish to witness a further display of such marvelous agency, thenceforth permitted the fire to die away, and kept his position in darkness and silence, till the fair dawn of returning day made him aware of the extreme danger to which he was exposed. He saw a quantity of white ashes before him, but the grim, dwarfish intruder, with the roof and walls of the hut, were gone, and he himself sat upon a stone, sure enough, but it formed one of the points of a deep, rugged precipice over which the slightest inadvertent movement had been the means of dashing him to pieces. End of section 24. Recording by Linda Johnson.
Brought to you by BunnySlippers.com. Check out their brand new Dino Sound Slippers. Slippers make a roaring sound every 3 steps. Made with green scaly fabric, soft plush uppers, foam footbeds, non-slip grips on soles, and 3 white claws on each foot. One size fits most, up to women's 10.5, men's 9. Footbed measures 10.5. Black Clock Audio Tales is a daily podcast that reads you a story, either a chapter of a novel or a whole short story. Join us in our exploration of old ghost stories, supernatural fiction, horror tales, folk tales, fantasy, gothic horror, weird fiction, and cosmic horror. And don't forget to join us for our monthly show about the Cthulhu mythos. Look for our podcast near the old wishing well in the blasted heath, wherever you find your podcasts. We suggest Podbean or Apple Podcasts. Find us on the web at pgttcm.com and at Black Clock Audio on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and Black Clock Audio Tales on YouTube. Welcome to Black Clock Audio Tales. Check out our new website over at www.pgttcm.com. Edited by Daniel Spitzer, music by Kevin MacLeod. Welcome, Lore of Great Britain.
Join us at the end of the month when we talk about the great old one.